وحكام العالم خيدين حق الشهيد ارتاح ارتاح
يا شهيد ارتاح ارتاح
وكانوا واسين يلا ارحل يا صهيون
يلا ارحل يا صهيون فلسطين ليبري فلسطين ليبري فلسطين ليبري فلسطين ليبري فلسطين ليبري فلسطين بالرعب بالدم نبيك يا فلسطين
يلا ارحل يا صهيون
يلا ارحل يا صهيون
ويلا ارحل يا صهيون
وفاين برا اسرائيل
كل البلدان
من غزة طلع القرار يا شاهد ارتاح ارتاح
يا شاهد ارتاح ارتاح
اشتادوا اساسينو يجيبا قلودا نطوبوا باليشينو
الحرة حرة والصهيون يطلع برا يا صهيون ويا صهيون ويا خسيس وشعب فلسطين ماشي الحيط ويلا احل
si no hay dos ejércitos como en Cisjordania lo único que quieren ellos es que nosotros transmitamos la verdad
¡Palestina! 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 ¡Palestina!
Thank you. This is IRIB English Radio from Tehran, the Islamic Republic of Iran. Well, we are continuing with our live coverage of the events in the Gaza Strip. There have been demonstrations in support of Palestinians all over the world. There have been demonstrations in Brazil, Argentina, the United States itself, in cities like Boston and Washington. And there have also been demonstrations in support of the Palestinians in all sorts of places, such as Santiago, Chile. And our coverage will be both the events in the Gaza Strip and also the wider demonstrations in support of the Palestinian people and the Palestinian cause, demonstrations all over the place in Indonesia, for example, in Asia, in all of the world's continents. And we certainly be covering those today. We go for a short break. We'll be back with our live rolling coverage of the events in the Gaza Strip. Stay with us.
The headlines: the Palestinian Foreign Ministry says Israel uses internationally banned bombs in Gaza as the regime continues its relentless onslaught against the besieged territory. Palestine's UN ambassador describes Israel's deadly campaign against Gaza's genocide, saying Israel's measures amount to war crimes. Iran strongly condemns Israel's atrocities against Palestinians in Gaza, saying the regime seeks to massacre the people of the besieged territory. Our top story for this half hour: Israel has been pressing ahead with a deadly offensive against the Gaza Strip over the past days, carrying out indiscriminate strikes across the besieged territory. According to the Palestinian Foreign Ministry, Israel has used internationally banned white phosphorus bombs in strikes on the Karama neighborhood of Gaza. This comes as the 1980 Geneva Convention forbids the use of these bombs in densely populated areas. At least 900 Palestinians, including 260 children, have been killed in Israeli strikes on Gaza's commercial zones, residential areas, and refugee camps as well. The attacks have left thousands of others injured. Israel started its onslaught on Saturday after Gaza-based resistance groups launched a multi-front operation against the regime. According to Israel's media, the operation has left 1,200 Israelis dead and nearly 3,000 injured in the latest retaliatory raids against the regime. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas launched fresh missile strikes on Israeli cities, including Tel Aviv and Ashkelon. The Iranian Foreign Ministry has vehemently condemned Israel's use of banned weapons in its ongoing onslaught against the besieged Gaza Strip. The ministry spokesman said using white phosphorus bombs against the people of Gaza is a clear example of war crimes committed by the regime. Nasser Kanani also strongly condemned Israel's move to tighten the siege of Gaza by cutting off the supply of water and electricity to the territory. He said extensive bombing of residential homes and medical facilities was another instance of the occupying regime's war crimes against the people of Gaza. He said the international community, the United Nations, and human rights organizations are responsible for stopping the crimes committed by Israel and its supporters and punishing the criminals. Israeli forces have killed 4 Palestinian young men during violent raids across the occupied West Bank. 21-year-old Mahmoud Saban and 25-year-old Ahmad Saban were killed by the regime forces live fire during a raid on a military checkpoint north of the city of Jenin. 2 other Palestinians were injured in the attack, one of them critically. 2 more Palestinian youths were killed by Israeli forces in a raid on the town of Silwan near the occupied East Al-Quds. According to Palestinian media, Abdurrahman Faraj and Ali al-Abbasi were directly shot by Israeli forces, who then left them to bleed to death. More than 230 Palestinians have been killed so far this year across the occupied territories, most of them in the West Bank. The United Nations has described 2023 as the deadliest year for Palestinians in the West Bank since it began keeping track of fatalities almost two decades ago. Palestine's ambassador to the United Nations has lashed out at Israel for its deputy campaign against the Gaza Strip and the regime's decision to impose a complete siege on the territory.
Such blatant dehumanization and attempts to bomb people into submission, to use starvation as a method of warfare, and to eradicate their national existence are nothing less than genocidal. These acts constitute war crimes.
Mansour made the comments in a letter to the UN Security Council. On Monday, Israel declared its decision to impose a complete siege on Gaza, cutting off the supply of electricity, food, fuel, and water. The move that could leave the territory on the brink of a new humanitarian crisis has drawn international condemnations. The UN said depriving civilians of goods essential for survival is banned under international law. The European Union also criticized Israel's move as a collective punishment against all Palestinians.
It's feared that Israel is engaging in an act of genocide across the Gaza Strip. Amid the deadly bombing, essential services have been cut off, all exits have been closed by the regime's forces, and vital aid is not being allowed in. EU foreign affairs ministers held emergency talks on Tuesday and had to concede that Israel is breaking international law.
The United Nations has already said that as cutting water, cutting electricity, cutting food to a mass of civilian people is against international law.
It's suggested the sheer scale of the latest crisis could be an impetus for positive change.
This could be an awakening moment in order to re-engage with the problem of Palestinians and Israel.
Campaigners in Belgium are condemning Israel's latest onslaught.
This mass aggression and bombing in Gaza cannot eliminate the action of the Palestinian resistance who came flying and on the ground fighting for liberation of Palestine from the river to the sea.
We, the Palestinian diaspora, have to be united. We can see today the hypocrisy of the West still funding and supporting the Zionist colonies and settlements inside Palestine. This must be stopped.
The EU's executive arm is being forced to backtrack after Commissioner Oliver Varhelyi tweeted on Monday that all funding to Palestine is being cut off.
The announcement which was made by Commissioner Varhelyi was not preceded by consultations with any member of the college.
Regarding Israel's latest blatant flouting of international law, there's no sign that the EU will take any action. It has never done so in the past. We have already seen pro-Palestinian rallies take place around the world since Saturday. Now groups here in Belgium have announced they will hold similar events in the coming days. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution describes as a destructive quake the anti-Israel operation launched by Palestinians on Saturday. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said those who attribute the operation to non-Palestinians are making mistakes. The leader underlined that the damage inflicted on Israel in the surprise operation by Palestinians is the result of the regime's own actions. Ayatollah Khamenei said the brave move by Palestinians was a response to years of Israeli crimes. The leader said Israel is now playing the victim card and that Western media outlets are helping the regime in this regard. Ayatollah Khamenei noted that the regime cannot be portrayed as an oppressed entity while it is actually a monster. He warned Israel and its backers that the bloodshed of Palestinians will bring them greater calamity. And Iran's foreign minister has strongly condemned Israeli atrocities against Palestinians during the regime's deadly attacks on the Gaza Strip. In a phone call with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, Hossein Amir Abdullahian said Israel is seeking to massacre the people of Gaza by cutting water and electricity and blocking the entry of food and medicine into the territory. He called Israel's move inhumane and vicious. The top diplomat added that what is happening in the occupied Palestine is a response to the Israeli regime's extremism and oppression of Palestinians. Amir Abdullahian also called his Kuwaiti counterpart, saying Israel's siege of Gaza amounts to a war crime. He urged Muslim governments to take action to end the blockade of the coastal territory. He also held a phone conversation with his Egyptian counterpart. Amir Abdullahian said Iran is ready to provide humanitarian aid to people in Gaza. Iran's Al Alam Arabic News Network has strongly condemned the attack on its office in the Gaza Strip by Israeli warplanes. The network said the regime attacked its office to prevent the world from knowing about the savage massacre of innocent Palestinian children. It added that Al Alam's office was attacked because the network has been at the forefront of the media fight against this cancerous tumor since it was established. The network said despite the attack, it will continue to inform the world of what is happening in the besieged territory. Following the strike, the activities of Al Alam office came to a complete halt, but none of its employees were injured. At least 7 journalists have been killed in Israeli attacks in recent days. Israel has a history of attacks on news networks and media personnel. Back in 2021, during the 11-day war on Gaza, the regime attacked a building that hosted offices of several media outlets, including Qatar's Al Jazeera. Israel's indiscriminate bombings of Gaza are also taking the lives and destroying homes and offices of reporters covering the regime's brutalities. Israeli warplanes have hit the residence of our correspondent in Gaza, Ashraf Shannon.
Well, yesterday, as I was covering the news here from Shifa Hospital, we've learned that my neighborhood was targeted by Israeli F-16 fighter jets. And the fact that roads were blocked and no internet access in the area, so no one knew exactly what happened there, except for seeing some of my neighbors, they were injured, who were inside their homes when the bombing happened, and they told me that their houses were bombed. And even checked with my family, who already evacuated the area 6 hours before the bombing, fearing for their lives. They went to a friend's family's far away from my neighborhood. Now, around 1:30 a.m., one of my neighbors managed to get some internet access, and he sent the photo of the house to one of my sons, and he posted it on Facebook. I wasn't shocked. I thought maybe some partial damage happened to the house. I didn't expect a 6-story building to be almost gone. It was hit directly by a missile from the Israeli regime or a bomb. Luckily, no one was in the building, but I don't know how to describe this. All of a sudden, after I heard the news and I was sure that the building is gone, I started telling my colleagues, yesterday I had a home and now I'm homeless, me and my family.
Breaking news. Of course, we have updates, constant updates of the situation that's taking place with regards to the Israeli attacks on Gaza. The Israeli regime has pounded the Jabalia refugee camp with airstrikes. Again, casualties are feared to increase as well. The leader of Yemen's Ansar Allah movement, Abdulmalik al-Houthi, says the Yemeni army is on standby and ready to perform the obligation of jihad against Israel in order to save the lives of innocent Palestinians.
The leader of the Ansar Allah movement, Sayyid Abdulmalik al-Houthi, stated in his latest speech that the Yemeni army is ready for jihad against the Israeli regime. According to al-Houthi, Yemen will not stand idle if the U.S. military directly intervenes to fight alongside Israel, adding that the obligation of jihad has become incumbent on all Islamic nations.
We hope that we were neighbors with Palestine. If that was the case, hundreds of thousands of our mujahideen would join the fight with the Palestinians and perform our holy obligation of jihad. However, we do not have a way to enter due to our geography. Despite this, we are in complete coordination with our brothers in the axis of jihad and resistance to do everything we can. This coordination has red lines and certain levels of events, including if the America, who is already supporting the Israeli enemy, intervenes directly, we are ready to join the fight, and we are ready to send missiles and drones and any other military option we have at our disposal.
The latest statements come after the U.S. Pentagon stationed warships and aircraft carrier strike groups in the Mediterranean near Palestine. The U.S. also deployed its F-35 fighter jet, the most advanced fighter aircraft in the U.S. arsenal. Al-Houthi confirmed the Palestinians will not be left alone to face this challenge.
We say to Palestinians, you are not alone. Our people are on your side. The free people of this nation are on your side. Do not pay attention to all the media campaigns, all the trembling and intimidation. You have succeeded in a major operation by the will of Allah. May God grant you success. This is a sign from God Almighty of the beginning of a new phase in which God will grant you more of His support and victory.
Because of Yemen's geographic location, any military involvement from Yemen would most likely include unmanned drones and Yemen's longest-range missile, Al-Tufan, which translates to the flood missile. Yusuf Maudi, Sana'a.
Thousands of pro-Palestine protesters have rallied in the Pakistani capital Islamabad to condemn the Israeli aggression against Palestinians in the occupied territories. Our correspondent Nasser Kazmi has more details in this report.
The people of Pakistan have attended a massive rally in the capital city of Islamabad to voice their anger against the atrocities committed by Israel in the Palestinian territories. They expressed their solidarity with the Palestinian people and called for an end to Israel's occupation of their land.
We demand from international communities that they should take action towards this inhumanity, and they should do something, put action towards this. Like, they are suffering for 70 years, the Palestinians suffering from 70 years, daily basis.
We're here to stand in support of the activities happening in Palestine by Hamas against the illegal Israeli occupation.
The demonstrators also slammed the United States for supporting Israel, saying the so-called champion of human rights is providing financial and military assistance to Israel for killing innocent men, women, and children in Palestine.
As America has announced the one-sided support of Israel, all Muslim Ummah, especially OIC, called its meeting and announced the support of the Palestinian fighters because they are under atrocities of the Israel, and all the Muslim Ummah has to support Palestinians.
The protesters urge the Muslim world to unite and put an end to attacks on Palestinians.
The firm stance of Pakistan is on Palestine's freedom and refusal to recognize Israel as a legitimate state reflects their commitment to the principles of justice, human rights, and international laws. Nasser Kazmi, Islamabad.
Thousands of UK residents have also taken to the streets to defend Palestinian rights to self-defense. That's as the British authorities have sided entirely with Israel, even as bombs rain down on civilian populated areas and besieged to Gaza region. Robert Carter was at the London rally and reports on the ground there.
Thousands of people came out in London to support opposing sides amid a flare-up of violence in the occupied Palestine. Israel's embassy became the focus of huge outpouring of support for Palestine. At the same time, a separate pro-Israel vigil was held outside Downing Street. In attendance was the British Prime Minister, who used the occasion to reiterate his staunch support for Israel's regime.
There are not two sides to these events. There is no question of balance. I stand with Israel.
Pro-Palestine protesters used their voice to condemn the occupation, which they say is the bottom line cause for the recent bloodshed.
Many people across the UK are deeply saddened, but also very furious, not just at the images and videos of intense human suffering coming out of occupied Palestine right now, but also at the British authorities themselves. The UK government, for example, is expressing some extreme pro-Israel comments right now, throwing their full support behind the regime, which is currently engaged in bombing raids on Gaza, which is targeting very heavily civilian populated areas.
Robert Carter, London.
That's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Iran Sat or Bat 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Supplication on Wednesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah who appointed the night to be a garment, and sleep for a rest, and day he appointed for a rising. To thee belongs praise, for thou roused me from my sleep. And hadst thou willed, thou wouldst have made it everlasting, an everlasting praise that will never be cut off, and whose number the creatures will never count. O Allah, to thee belongs praise, for thou created, then proportioned, and ordained and decreed, and gave death and bestowed life, and made sick and healed, and made well and afflicted, and sat upon the throne and encompassed the kingdom. I supplicate thee with the supplication of one whose mediation is weak, whose stratagems have been cut off, whose term has drawn near, whose expectation from this world has shrunk, whose neediness for thy mercy has intensified, whose remorse for his neglect has become great, whose slips and stumbles have become many, and whose repentance is devoted sincerely to thy face. So bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and his household, the good, the pure. And provide me with the intercessions of Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, and deprive me not of his companionship. Surely thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, Decree for me on Wednesday four things. Induce me to be strong in obedience to Thee, to be joyful in worshiping Thee, to be desirous of Thy reward, and to abstain from that which would make incumbent upon me Thy painful punishment. Thou art gentle to whom Thou wilt.
The Palestinian Islamic Resistance Movement Hamas says no negotiations regarding Israeli captives will take place so long as Israel continues with its attacks on the besieged Gaza Strip. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Iran's Press TV has covered this story and tells us more. The Palestinian Islamic Resistance Movement Hamas says an ongoing operation against Israel will continue, while rejecting any negotiations on Israeli captives so long as the regime's attacks on the besieged Gaza Strip continue. Abu Obeidah, the spokesman for the Gaza Strip-based movement's military wing, the Ezzedin al-Qassam Brigades, made the remark in a recorded message late on Monday, 9th of October, warning that the Israeli regime must be ready to pay a high price in exchange for the captives' freedom. The spokesman said, "The matter of prisoners is a strategically crucial issue with a well-defined trajectory, and the occupation will inevitably bear the consequences." Abu Obeidah noted that the resistance fighters have succeeded in apprehending a significant number of the enemy's soldiers at various battlefronts, who have been relocated to Al-Qassam Brigade's detention facilities. Abu Obeidah added, "We categorically refuse to engage in deliberations or negotiations regarding prisoner matters under the duress of aggression, and the enemy must prepare to pay the high price." Abu Obeidah noted that Hamas has launched a military operation against Israel with unwavering resolve and courage, is fully aware of the potential outcomes, and is also prepared for any eventuality. Despite the enemy's possession of advanced security and military technology, they have failed to confront our fighters on the ground for over 60 hours now, the spokesman added. Abu Obeidah emphasized that the resistance fighters will continue their large-scale operation across multiple locations with constant rotation of forces, the dispatch of reinforcements armed with weapons and equipment, and the capture of more prisoners. He said Hamas fighters have engaged in unrelenting clashes with Israeli forces, culminating in the defeat of the entire Gaza division of the Israeli occupation army on the first day of hostilities. He explained that Operation Al-Aqsa Storm came from the Zionist regime's repression of Palestinians, which had reached its peak through the desecration of the Holy Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. The enemy thought that by closing the Al-Aqsa Mosque to our people and releasing herds of settlers to ignite a religious war, they would escape punishment for their crimes. He also criticized the international community and the United Nations for ignoring the Israeli regime's crimes, saying that large-scale operation against Israel was a response to the occupying regime's acts of aggression against innocent Palestinians. Abu Obeidah warned the Israeli regime that the era of your triumphs have irrevocably ended, giving way to an era of defeat and setbacks. The Ezzedin al-Qassam brigades maintain a firm grip on the direction of the battle, underpinned by the efficient command and control system, and are fully prepared to endure for an extended period of time, Abu Obeidah pointed out. Since Saturday, 7th of October, the Gaza Strip-based resistance group have fired thousands of rockets at the occupied Palestinian territories. On Monday, 9th of October, Hamas lauded the ongoing surprise attack against Israel as a legitimate right of Palestinians in response to the illegal entity's decades-long aggression and the silence of the international community. Hamas has praised the Operation Al-Aqsa Storm as legitimate Palestinian right to self-defense. Hamas made this statement on the third day of Operation Al-Aqsa Storm, the largest military operation against the Israeli regime in decades. The battle of Operation Al-Aqsa Storm is a legitimate right for our people to defend ourselves, to defend our land and our sanctities, in light of the continued aggression of the occupation forces and the silence and failure of the world to put an end to its escalating terrorism and its denial of all rights of the Palestinian people and their aspirations to liberate their homeland and achieve a return to our homeland, the movement said in a statement. CNN Cable News Network has also covered this story and tells us more. The Palestinian Islamic Resistance Movement Hamas said late on Sunday, 8th of October, to be holding more than 100 hostages in Gaza, including high-ranking Israeli army officers, according to Musa Abu Marzouk, the deputy chief of Hamas's political bureau. Qatar has been in talks with Hamas about the hostages it holds inside Gaza, and the United States has been coordinating with the Qataris as they play a key mediating role with Hamas, a senior U.S. official confirmed to CNN. CNN has reached out to both the governments of Qatar and Israel for comment. Abu Obeidah, the Ezzedine al-Qassam Brigade spokesperson, said Hamas will not negotiate on the issue of hostages whilst under Israeli fire. Israeli jets continued to bombard the Gaza Strip with deadly airstrikes on Monday, 9th of October, as the violence continued into a third day. The Zionist regime airstrikes have killed at least 687 Palestinians as of Monday, 9th of October, including dozens of Palestinian children and women, and left thousands injured, according to the Palestinian Ministry of Health. The Russian news agency TASS has also covered the same story and tells us more. The Palestinian Islamic Resistance Movement Hamas says there will be no hostage negotiations as long as fighting continues. We will not negotiate on the issue of captives under fire from Israeli forces, the Hamas movement said in a statement. The Palestinian Hamas movement has announced that it does not intend to hold any negotiations on the fate of the hostages seized by its forces on Israeli territory near the Gaza Strip, while hostilities continue, according to the Al-Hadath television channel. Hamas representatives will not negotiate on the issue of captives under fire from Israeli forces, the movement said in a statement quoted by the Al-Hadath television channel.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Black and white.
Una constante permanente en la historia de la humanidad.
A constant in the history of humanity, of small or large nations, is the struggle for sovereignty and independence, for self-determination, for their own development, self-government. Countries like Palestine, Yemen, Korea, Vietnam, we're talking about medium and small countries that have given an example of courage and fight against very poor enemies, such as imperialism and Zionism. In Latin America, we have a tiny country that is Nicaragua, which throughout the 20th century, with the people, started building a social and political leadership against this extremely powerful enemy that was the United States, obtaining a great victory in 1979 when the Sandinista revolution came to power.
Cuando se instala en el poder la revolución sandinista, levantando las banderas.
Raising the flags of Augusto César Sandino, the leader, the man who at some point fought, even expelled North American imperialism and was assassinated from behind. That's how it is, how imperialism has acted. But these are moments, later superior moments, came of reconstruction, of construction, and Sandino's flags.
Y la bandera de Sandino, la bandera del sandinismo.
The flags of Sandinismo have marched like a cry for freedom, sovereignty, independence, throughout Latin America as a whole. Leading from a small country, it has shown that profound transformation are possible, not only necessary, but possible, in this case, national and social liberation. And basically, that is, we are standing on our own feet.
Decir, estamos parados en nuestros propios pies.
Nicaragua is a small country. Today, it borders 7 million inhabitants. But there's something about it that for some is a blessing, and others might consider it a curse. It has two ocean outlets, the Pacific Ocean and the Caribbean Sea. And that condition makes imperialism always set its eyes and want to have the prisoner and under its direction. I refer to U.S. imperialism. Hence the constant aggression and military, multifaceted economic corruption to destabilize the country. Because clearly a country with these two aliases, two organs, is very important from a geopolitical, geostrategic point of view. Since that allows a very important military point and also for trade, which is fundamental. This makes imperialism very active.
Esto hace que el imperialismo esté muy activo.
In 2018, and the current government of Daniel Ortega faced a coup, activated a number of terrorist elements and some former leaders, including from the Sandinista movement, who were ideologically and politically disgraced, who had fallen into the trap of buying the model and the orders from the United States, and that they even received large amounts of money, as has been shown. However, the government of Daniel Ortega continues to be an example of construction and social progress in Latin America. Today, it has 104 large hospitals, 143 health centers, free education, free health, national independence, and also, why not say it, at the international level, today it is on the right side of history. That is, entering unity and in alliance with those who are seeking a multipolar world, such as Russia, China, Iran, and other countries. Nicaragua today is on its feet. This is Black and White. I'm Eduardo Artes.
Soy Eduardo Artes. Estamos acá con Gabriel Arce.
I am with Gabriel Arce. He has a bachelor's degree and is ambassador of Nicaragua in Chile. He used to be a student leader. At the same time, he was a convicted revolutionary who fought on the Sandinista front in very difficult moments. He has also some internationalist missions. You're very welcome, Gadiel, to our program, Black and White.
Thank you very much, Eduardo. It's a great honor for me to be on this show, precisely when we are on a day of the 128th anniversary of the birth of the great General Sandino.
Please explain to us a little about the importance of General Sandino. His stature spans all of Latin America and even worldwide, even though he was a small man. But he had a tremendous heart that was the general of free men. That's how he was known. Tell us a little about him and what this anniversary means.
Sandino, como usted sabe, compañero Eduardo.
As you know, and the world will know, Sandino defeated the U.S. Marines. Nicaragua has been a country that has experienced constant wars, and Sandino rebels against the United States and wages a six-year war. The United States intervened and occupied Nicaragua. Sandino expels and defeats the U.S., and it is the first defeat that the United States had in Latin America. In the Pentagon, until recently, they had two flags of their defeats on the left and their victories on the right. Between their two defeats, there are Vietnam and Nicaragua. Sandino is a world icon for fighting for the national sovereignty of Nicaragua. It is a great inheritance that we currently have. It is interesting that Albert Einstein says about Sandino, "You are a universal general." Gabriel Mistral, the Chilean Nobel Prize winner, says, "The little crazy army." And the French intellectual says, "The general of free men." And coincidentally, we're happy because this legacy, this flag, we continue to hold high today.
How can we approach this legacy today? General Sandino's proposal for sovereignty, social justice, national independence, and the construction of a good society.
In July 19, 1979, a group of guerrillas led by Commander Daniel Ortega entered Managua victorious, following the legacy of Sandino. Currently, what is this legacy of Sandino? National sovereignty. We are a country that raises this flag of national sovereignty. In the new world architecture, in this new world composition, where the United States insists on maintaining the Monroe Doctrine, the doctrine of manifest destiny, the new configuration is this legacy of Sandino to have relations with all the countries of the world within the framework of respect for our national sovereignty.
A nuestra soberanía nacional.
Interesante. Ahora, dime.
It is really interesting. Now, how can you understand this pause that exists between the first moment of the Sandinista government after the triumph and its resumption? And this pause that was to some extent determined by the fall of the countries in the socialist orbit at the time. How is it reconstructed? Because it is very new that they had the ability to retake the government with an overwhelming majority, according to the figures.
We see it from this point of view. The first stage, the fight of Sandinista Front, has been long since Sandino. Then the fight in the mountains, which was very difficult, but we managed to win on July 19. We had 10 years with the construction of the first stage of the revolution, besieged by the U.S. We were just beginning to govern, and the government of the President Reagan began with a hostile policy and with a war of aggression, that even this war of aggression, we sued in the International Court of Justice, and we won it. Nicaragua won this dispute that we raised. So these 10 years of building the new Nicaragua where the U.S. ambassador was no longer in charge, where the Pentagon was no longer in charge. To say, vote in the United Nations like this, vote in international forums in this way. July 19 for us meant the independence and total sovereignty of Nicaragua. What happened? Let's say that in these 10 years, there has been enormous wear and tear. Nicaraguan society lived in war, this war of aggression. Commander Daniel Ortega made the decision to hold the elections even at war, because no one holds elections at war, and we lost it. We say that the people did not vote against the Sandinista Front. The people voted for peace, because there was social wear. However, later, there were 16 years of neoliberal governments. In these 16 years, the country totally regressed, and at the level of foreign policy, it returned to the U.S. dominance, at the level of social demands, at the level of the achievements that we had achieved. They were completely moved backwards. After these 16 years, there was no electricity for 14 hours in Nicaragua.
Perfecto.
Perfect. We will continue our talk after a break, and we will follow this question. Why was it possible to resume the Sandinista government?
Thank you very much, for sure. I continue my talk with Gadiel Arce in this interesting interview about Nicaragua. We were talking about the moment when the plebiscite took place and the Sandinista Front lost it, and that it is explaining very well that rather than losing it, what the people voted for was peace, because Nicaragua was living a moment of very strong struggle and with material implications of consequences of the intervention of North American imperialism and the government of Ronald Reagan. Please.
De Ronald Reagan. Por favor.
Perfecto.
Perfect. One piece of information is important. Many times the Sandinista Front is laid to be anti-democratic, and there is a series of lies from the empire that we already know. Referring to the democratic character of the Sandinista Front, when taking power by force of arms, handing it over by way of elections, later there were three periods, 1, 2, 3. Until in 2006, we retook power, we won the government. It is very important to mention that the Sandinista Front has always had the power because there was this relation with the nation, humble people, students, workers and peasants, and we will never stop this.
That's why we're talking about a real revolution, because if we do not lose contact with people, there is no problem. Everything can be recovered.
Commander Daniel Ortega said a very interesting phrase in the 1990s. We are going to govern from the base. Because one thing is to govern, and another thing is to have power. So the power is in the hands of the people. Even our slogan now is that the people preside. So these periods of neoliberalism passed, where health, education, housing, and electric light went backwards. We had a 14-hour blackout in Nicaragua, where the electrical matrix completely collapsed. In 2007, the people voted in favor of us precisely because we were three in the streets. Commander Daniel visited farmers and university students and went throughout the national territory, expanding the Sandinista Front, and he didn't step back. He was present in the worst moments. That's why the people voted in favor of us in 2007, and we started the second period of the revolution.
Etapa de la revolución.
Una etapa que también no es.
It was not actually a simple stage. In 2008, there is an incredible coup attempt with a terrorist act. Tell us a little about this and how you see the measures that the government of Commander Daniel Ortega had to take in defense of sovereignty, independence, and the established order within Nicaragua.
Okay, perfecto, hermano.
Well, what really happens in the second period of government? We built a new model of governing the country. It is a model that includes the government, the workers, and the businessmen. This model is with the origin of idiosyncrasy. It allows us to agree on these three actors in the governance of the country. The result is spectacular in the first years. We grew by almost 5%, and the country begins a path of peace that we have never had in history. Nicaragua begins with roads, health centers, universities in the countryside. It is no longer the illiterate Nicaragua, but rather a developing Nicaragua. Apparently, North Americans, the North American Empire, the European Empire, didn't like this model of governance, because indeed we were building the new Nicaragua that was benefiting the poor of Nicaragua. What happened next? The United States gives the order to the business community that was building the new homeland with us to get out of this model. The United States also gives the order to a small group of students and starts to play them. They begin to build a group of mercenaries in Nicaragua. Later in 2018, the role they give to these political movements is to create thousands of false NGOs, NGOs that were completely invented to finance this failed coup. In 2018, they were advancing with a matrix of lies, because this is very important to say, the matrix of lies that they were building at the level of social media. In 2018, they attempted a coup, deceiving certain sectors of our society. They rose up, and we, led by Commander Daniel Ortega and Mrs. Rosario, managed to defeat them. I have to be clear that we defeated the U.S. policy. Why? Because the U.S. was paying the individuals and financing the groups, and we have all the sources, all the data on the internet and how USAID paid these mercenaries. Nicaragua, like other countries, for example, Chile, takes care of its institutionality. The Latin American countries and the U.S. also take care of their institutionality. So we have laws. What we have done is simply apply our laws to these groups, and we were violating our laws. But in addition, the violation of our laws was due to the murder of Nicaraguan people. Dead policemen, murdered policemen lying on the streets. They were set on fire in the streets. These cops were burned alive. This was a policy of terror in this century. We were successful in defeating this policy of terror and with people's participation, which is the element that constructs the revolution.
Querido compañero.
Perfecto. Sí.
Perfect. But in particular, the nationality was taken away.
La nacionalidad.
Claro que sí.
Yes, that's right. The U.S. applies death penalty and kills those traitors who violate their sovereignty. In Chile, there are also certain laws. All countries have their own laws against the ones who want to destroy the peace of the people and society, the peace that is difficult to build. We simply applied the laws of a constitutional government that is our government to those traitors. There's a sum of factors for receiving money from abroad, for murdering the people of Nicaragua, and for obeying the mandates of a foreign policy. We have this kind of treatment from Sandino. Sandino was implacable with the traitors because there is no other way. One can have different opinions about political issues at the internal level, but we can discuss these differences among Nicaraguan people. But what was the history? Because the information is very important. The U.S. has wanted to have Nicaragua as a colony. Imagine, Eduardo, that the U.S. put an American president in our country in 1856, William Walker. William Walker had two main decrees. There were slavery and the English language officially. In this small country, the U.S. created all the war laboratories. They tested with the Nicaraguans, but Sandino rises up. And pay attention that there are loyal people like Commander Daniel Ortega and Rosario Murillo and an army of young people who stand up and say, no, here we Nicaraguans rule, and we set our laws and constitution, and we apply them to those people who threaten our peace and stability as a country.
Muy bien, Gabriel. Bueno.
Well, thank you, Gidiel. We have just a few minutes to end our program. The ties with Latin America, mainly because there are apparently progressive governments that have not been good with the sovereign government of Nicaragua. However, other governments are. How is this situation at the Latin American level?
in a few seconds, please.
En poco segundo.
Claro que sí. Nosotros queremos.
For sure, we maintain a global harmony policy of respect for international law, and this is what we demand from other countries. We respect them, and they have to do the same. And we are involved in this new world architecture in favor of peace and the development of nations. Well, dear friend, I want to thank you for this little interview.
Muchas gracias, Gabriel.
Thank you very much, Gadiel. We hope the best for Nicaragua in this episode of Black and White. It's a sign of friendship. Long live peace.
Encantado, Gabriel.
Viva la paz.
Eso es.
In the limelight.
The United Kingdom's oil and gas sector regulator is drawing up plans to give companies a greater focus on decarbonisation, given that they are not on track to deliver a commitment to halving their emissions by 2030. We take a look at the British media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. United Kingdom's oil and gas companies need to do more if they are to meet an official target of halving their emissions from fossil fuel extraction by the end of the decade, according to the North Sea regulator. The North Sea Transition Authority, the NSTA, said it would set out proposals to help give fossil fuel companies a greater focus on their climate pledges, amid concerns that targets would be missed without further action. The firms promised to slash the carbon emissions caused during the production of oil and gas as part of a deal struck with the government in 2021 to secure billions of pounds in state help for the sector. This year, the British government set out plans to grant more than 100 new North Sea exploration licenses and gave the green light to develop the huge Rosebank oil field. The North Sea Transition Authority warning is the latest to cast doubt on the United Kingdom's meeting its legally binding climate targets, given government announcements of plans to delay the ban on combustion engines in new vehicles and the phase-out of gas boilers, and to water down home energy efficiency standards. The watchdog's proposals will form part of an industry consultation to encourage oil and gas operators to take action today. The industry is under pressure to reduce carbon emissions from oil and gas production, which accounts for about 3% of total United Kingdom greenhouse gas emissions. Last month, the North Sea Transition Authority report found the industry was on track to meet the interim emissions reduction targets of 10% by 2025 and 25% by 2027, compared with 2018, but added that bold measures will be required to halve carbon emissions by 2030. Significant progress has been made, but there is more work to be done, and the North Sea Transition Authority estimates that without further initiatives, the 2030 emissions reduction target agreed between the government and industry as part of the North Sea Transition Deal may be missed. The government's transition deal earmarked more than £8 billion